Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, May 12th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. And on the front page, a section called Hats Off to Grads. Commencement speaker Offerman planning to crib from others wiser than myself. By Melissa Murley, Champaign. Nick Offerman could draw from his best-selling books for advice to offer during Saturday's commencement speech to 2017 University of Illinois graduates. But the actor, author, humorist, and woodworker doesn't feel particularly qualified to offer his own original thoughts. It will mainly be the passing on of the tutelage of those wiser than myself, he said. Among those, his mentor, UI Professor Emeritus Shozo Sato, and Robin McFarkar, head of the acting programs in the UI Department of Theater, from which Offerman graduated in 1993. Offerman also will quote, during the university-wide ceremony, other luminaries, including his wife, actress, comedian Megan Mullally, and his parents, and perhaps a couple of surprise sources. His parents will be at Memorial Stadium listening. I'm so blessed that they're young and healthy, and they will still put up with an entire performance of mine, he said. The UIs is the second commencement speech offer Offerman has accepted, though others have come his way. The first to which he agreed was from North Bennett Street School, a really cool trade school in Boston. Among the crafts taught there, woodworking. He was especially delighted to give that 2015 address inside Boston's Old North Church, famous for being where the one if by land and two if by sea signal was said to have been sent during the American Revolution. I guess because of the stentorian nature of my character, Ron Swanson, for Parks and Recreation, I get asked to do a lot of commencement speeches and to officiate at a lot of weddings, which I find very moving, Offerman said. I have not yet agreed to any weddings. Well before the offer came from his alma mater, Offerman read four or five commencement speeches. The best, he said, is author George Saunders' 2013 address at Syracuse University. In it, the author touched on themes such as the need for kindness and all the things that work against achieving it, and the risk in focusing too much on success, according to the New York Times. The speech was so good it was published as a book, noted Offerman, a huge fan of Saunders. Another amazing graduation speech that Offerman read was David Foster Wallace's 2005 address at Kenyon College, also published in book form. Wallace, considered one of the best writers of his generation, grew up in Urbana. Offerman is a fan. I can take solace in the fact that those two guys are considered two of the most creative and empathetic writers of our epoch, he said. I'm an ex-farm boy breakdancer. Whenever I look at my grammar, I take solace from that fact. He feels more excited than nervous about talking to thousands in Memorial Stadium. My biggest crowd to date was 13,000 at a homecoming at Florida State University, he said. I was rather unnerved when they all participated in something they call the Seminole Chop. I think that's in the same file drawer as our own Chief Illiniwek capering about the football field. I am interested to see how my incredibly dreadful speaking pace matches up with the stadium sound system. Offerman himself didn't attend the UI's university-wide graduation when he matriculated. Instead, he took part in the theater department's little ceremony for a group of a dozen or so graduates. We had a nice little affair up in the lobby of the Krannert Center. We didn't have any clown from a TV show. We just had internal luminaries inspiring us to greater things. In fact, it's kind of funny. This will be the first time I will step into the football stadium. Though he was a high school football player in Manuka and a fan of the Illini, Offerman didn't have the time to attend games because the theater department kept us under the lash 24/7. While here this weekend, he won't have much time for anything but his official duties. He's now under a lash of another type, as the main roadie for his wife's band, Nancy and Beth. Mullally and Stephanie Hunt, plus others in their band, are touring in support of their self-titled debut album released April 7th. I had to get special permission to be excused for the Friday night dinner and Saturday ceremony, Offerman joked. Then I scamper back to Manuka for Mother's Day with my family, then back to New York for more showbiz. Offerman was on the UI campus a month ago for a fundraiser for Japan House, founded by Saito. He promised to return again, saying he's very invested in supporting the UI Theater Department and Japan House. The effect Professor Saito had on my life, and the similar effects they've had on so many, and the fact that I can be an influence on supporting that beautiful effort, will keep me coming back as long as they let me on an airplane, he said. And next, a financial forecast. UI's credit rating likely to take another hit soon, by Julie Worth, Springfield. The University of Illinois could see a drop in its Moody's credit ratings by the end of the month, tied to a likely downgrade in the state's rating, a top UI official says. We are in the crosshairs, Vice President Walter Knorr told UI trustees on Thursday. Lower credit ratings can make it more expensive for the university or the state to borrow money because they have to pay higher interest rates to investors. 2 weeks ago, Standard & Poor's downgraded the UI from an A-plus rating to an A because it also lowered the state's rating. But its report about the UI was fairly positive, Knorr said. Under Standard & Poor's rules, the university's rating can't be more than three levels above the state's because it relies on the state for financial support, Knorr said. On April 17th, Moody's put six Illinois public universities, including the UI, on notice for a potential downgrade tied to its possible lowering of the state's credit rating, Knorr said. I think it's going to be in connection with whatever they do with the state, he said. Knorr went over the metrics used by Moody's to evaluate the university and said the UI is financially stronger than the state. The UI rating of AA3 is currently five notches above the state's Baa2 rating. He's still hopeful that Moody's will decide not to make a change, but we'll just have to await the outcome, he said. The state continues to languish financially with no budget for the past 2 years. The backlog of unpaid bills is now at $13 billion, Knorr said. In fiscal 2016, the UI's partial state funding represented only 5% of the university's total revenue, down from 15% previously, Knorr said. However, state payments for health insurance and pensions for UI employees made up another quarter of the UI budget. The UI's $351 million bridge appropriation from the state for fiscal 2017 is about 55% of its usual amount. And the next article is from health officials, harsh words for Rodney Davis. Pride, people will die and he will own that vote, by Tom Kasich, Champaign. The executive director of the Champaign County Healthcare Consumers says she wants to publicly debate U.S. Representative Rodney Davis about the provisions of the American Health Care Act that he helped pass earlier this month. Davis, despite repeated attempts Thursday, could not be reached for a response. Claudia Lenhoff, who heads the Grassroots Consumer Group, and Julie Pride, the administrator of the Champaign Urbana Public Health District, both hit Davis for his vote for the Obamacare replacement and said they don't believe he understands what it will do to constituents in his Central Illinois district. People will die, and he will own that vote. He's voted for it, Pride said. Literally, both us have tried to help him understand the consequences of this bill long before it was voted on. The two made their remarks at a press conference Thursday that happened 2 days after about 250 people came to Davis's Champaign office, either to meet with him in small groups or to protest his position on health care, environmental issues, support for President Trump, and a host of other topics. Lenhoff said Davis's public comments and remarks on social media have been extremely misleading or incorrect and seem to indicate that Representative Davis does not understand key aspects of the bill he just voted for and also does not have a working knowledge of the Affordable Care Act and how it is, in fact, working very well for most Americans and for his constituents. She said she wants to have a public meeting with the Taylorville Republican to review the provisions of the health care law that passed the House on May 4th with only Republican votes. We want to urge Representative Davis to hold a public meeting to talk about the Affordable Care Act, about Medicaid, and about the American Health Care Act that he voted for. People need real and factual information, not talking points from a Republican playbook or false reassurances, Lenhoff said. I would also like Representative Davis to know that I would welcome the opportunity to have a public dialogue or debate with him about the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid and the effect of the bill he voted for. She said she would be open to any kind of a meeting. Whatever format would be fine with me. I do know that there are a lot of constituents who would have specific questions, and I think the dialogue would benefit from those questions. I do feel like it would need to be moderated, and there would need to be enough time to get into the policy details, she said. Lenhoff said she intended to make a formal request with a letter to the congressman. I haven't spoken directly with him. I will send him a letter. All of the other methods have not worked, she said. Lenhoff, who has worked for the Champaign-based group for more than 20 years, said she has evaluated health policy at the state and federal level and witnessed the impact of those policies on consumers. I was here helping consumers in the pre-Affordable Care Act days, bearing witness to the failures of health insurance and the suffering of our clients. These were the days when we left health insurance regulations up to the states, the days to which Rodney Davis wants to return us with his support of the American Health Care Act, she said. Both Pride and Lenhoff acknowledged problems with the Obama-backed Affordable Care Act and said it needed to be fixed, but they insisted the Republican plan would result in less prevention, fewer people with health care coverage, and more expensive coverage for most Americans. Claudia and I are usually associated with championing the low income, but this is going to hurt so many people who are arguing for it that they don't even understand, Pride said. It's not just how will this affect other people, which seems to be what a lot of people are concerned about. They think they're somehow immune to it. They're going to be finding, if we don't get this straightened around, a rude awakening because their employer-paid health insurance will go up and they're going to lose services. They're going to have more out-of-pocket costs. They're going to go back to extra copays. We'll be right back to where we were. And next we have from Julie Wirth from Springfield, UI Trustees Report. Killeen, don't want to be the poachees. Brad Underwood's six-year, $18 million deal with the UI didn't officially begin until Thursday, when trustees approved his appointment. But the Illini basketball coach started accumulating a salary on March 18th, as soon as his appointment took effect. According to contract details released Thursday, Underwood will be paid $331,507 for the roughly 6 weeks from March 18th through April 30th until his contract officially kicked in. His employment agreement, which runs through April 30, 2023, is still being finalized. The major contract terms were released in March, but Thursday brought more details. As with other coaching contracts, Underwood is also eligible for performance bonuses, up to a maximum of $900,000 annually, based on academic and athletic achievements. Other terms include payment for buying out his commitments under his prior contract with Oklahoma State, estimated at $3 million, 90% of the net profits from men's basketball camps, use of two courtesy vehicles, and a country club membership. Also Thursday, the board approved former Washington University coach Nancy Fahey as women's basketball coach. Her six-year, $3.3 million deal was announced when she was hired, but she will also earn almost $54,000 for the period from March 22nd, when her appointment took effect through April 30th. Thursday was the first meeting for new trustee Donald Edwards, 50, of Chicago, who was appointed by Governor Bruce Rauner to replace Ricardo Estrada after his term ended in January. Edwards, a former UI golfer, is chief executive officer of FlexPoint Ford. Two other board vacancies have yet to be filled by Rauner. UI President Tim Killeen presented his new Distinguished Faculty Recruitment Program, which will invest $60 million in hiring star faculty from other universities over the next 3 years. The money would not go to recruiting or to recurring salaries, but one-time startup costs for new lab equipment, renovations, and graduate students. The UI, which has struggled with the state's budget crisis, has lost key faculty to competing universities, though Killeen highlighted some top new hires on Thursday. "We don't want to be the poachees, we want to be the poachers," he said. The program will invest $30 million from the president's office the next 3 years to be matched by the campuses to hire 10 to 15 new faculty each year. Trustees approved former NCSA director Edward Seidel as vice president for economic development and innovation, annual salary $380,000. Dean of Students Kenneth Bellum is interim vice chancellor for student affairs, $213,500, and School of Architecture director Peter Mortensen as interim dean of the College of Fine and Applied Arts at $215,938. And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called "A Fake Investigation. The Situation is Even Worse Than People Think." Woody Allen said it best in Bananas, one of his comic movie farces, when he erupted in rage to denounce the courtroom proceedings, "I object, Your Honor. This trial is a travesty. It's a travesty of a mockery of a sham of a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham," Allen's character shouted. He wasn't talking about government in the state of Illinois, but he could have been. Specifically, he could have been perfectly describing the Illinois State Board of Elections' toothless, almost pointless probe of years of suspicious campaign spending by Frank Martino, a longtime Illinois House member who is now the state's Auditor General. Martino currently is under federal investigation in connection with about $500,000 in odd campaign spending. That includes about $200,000 in gasoline and vehicle repairs over 11 years at a Spring Valley gas station owned by political associate. The other $300,000 involves money spent at a bank for political services the bank doesn't provide. It's ironic, but somehow fitting, that the man legislators elected to conduct audits to make sure the state spends taxpayer dollars wisely is under investigation for misspending money in his campaign. But that's not all. It gets worse. The election board has been conducting an investigation of sorts into Martino's spending. This week, a hearing officer recommended that Martino's campaign committee be fined for willfully violating an order to provide information the hearing officers demanded. The elections board will consider whether to approve the unspecified fine at a meeting scheduled for next week. But the issue apparently is moot. The fine isn't really a fine because the elections board is, by design of the legislature, a mockery of a travesty of two mockeries of a sham. It represents the illusion of oversight rather than oversight itself, a mirage to gull citizens into a false sense of security while our elected officials, if they wish, run wild. For starters, any fines approved by the election board wouldn't be paid by Martino personally, but by his campaign committee. Further, Martino's campaign committee won't pay any fines because it was closed December 31, 2015, and no longer exists. Of course, the board wasn't exactly enthusiastic about the investigation from the start. When news of the suspicious spending broke, it took no action because state law bars it from doing so unless a complaint is filed. When Streeter resident David Cook filed a complaint, the board said it still wouldn't conduct an investigation. Board members told Cook that if, at his own expense, he hired a lawyer to conduct an investigation of Martino's spending, it would listen to what the lawyer had to say. Ultimately, Cook retained a volunteer of the Chicago-based Liberty Justice Center to look into the matter. Here's what has happened. Martino refused to testify, invoking his Fifth Amendment right to remain silent. A Martino campaign official testified that she had destroyed most of the spending records because they were more than 2 years old. Further, Martino representatives said it was impossible to answer specific questions because campaign workers simply purchased gasoline when they needed it and never kept track of mileage. That response is essentially a non-response, far short of any kind of explanation of where $500,000 in campaign funds went. While disappointing, the bizarre nature of this inquiry doesn't come as much of a surprise. Unless, of course, people didn't expect campaign spending oversight to be this bad. But it is, and for a very good reason. Our elected officials don't want any stinking oversight. Many of them view their campaign funds as personal piggy banks. Martino still has to deal with federal investigators. They won't be as easy to roll as the disinterested and mostly powerless inquisitors at the elections board. And now, in the From Our Readers section, we'll begin with a piece written by Gordon Herbert of Champaign called Ranger's Death Was Not Covered. A soldier returned home to Bloomington Normal 2 weeks ago. It would unremarkable, except that Army Ranger Sergeant Joshua Rogers returned home in a coffin, having been killed in action in Afghanistan. Living in Champaign, one hardly received any notice of this tragic event. I think it is reprehensible that a young serviceman from central Illinois is killed in action, and the local media basically ignored the homecoming of this soldier. Sergeant Rogers was 22 years old, a young man with what is presumed a wonderful future in front of him. Sergeant Rogers deserves to be acknowledged for giving his life for his country. Hundreds of the residents of Bloomington Normal turned out to celebrate the life of Army Ranger and Sergeant Joshua Rogers. Governor Bruce Rauner went to the wake service without fanfare. President Trump called the family to offer his condolences. Shame on the news outlets of Champaign and Urbana for ignoring this event. It is sad to note that Sergeant Joshua Rogers fulfilled his contract with the American people. He is a true hero. May he rest in peace. And that again was written by Gordon Herbert of Champaign. And the next from our reader's piece is written by Jim Amon of Paxton, called President Wright, World Upside Down. It was really great to see President Donald Trump address the recent National Rifle Association convention in Atlanta, the first sitting president to do so since Ronald Reagan. This simple act of courage spoke volumes to those of us who support the Second Amendment. A little icing on the cake was the president's boycott of the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner on the same weekend. Predictably, the Democrats and the left went nuts. It's so refreshing to see our new president bucking the leftward swerve of our country. Now Democrats are claiming Republicans will be killing people with the new health care bill. Such hypocrisy. The Democrats already approve of the killing of the unborn by the millions. Apparently, these folks are too ignorant to realize that there are other forms of birth control. In the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul said a day would come when evil would be called good and good would be called evil. These words of wisdom are just a reflection of the quandary Democrats and the left find themselves these days in this so-called age of tolerance and enlightenment. And that was written by Jim Amon of Paxton. And the next from our reader's piece is written by Bill Mitzi of Monticello, called Madigan Behind Illinois Insolvency. In reading the May 8th News Gazette editorial, Puerto, Illinois, it causes reflection on Illinois' slide into bankruptcy, as Governor Bruce Rauner shares some blame for the current state of the Illinois budget, one other person shares the greater responsibility. Who has been the most powerful politician during Illinois' slide toward insolvency and bankruptcy? Mike Madigan, our decades-long Speaker of the House, has had nearly absolute rule over our state government for nearly 30 years. When will our statewide elected legislators ever take over running our state? Will Madigan's control ever end? And again, that was written by Bill Mitzi of Monticello. And the next from our reader's piece is written by Ted Gill of Monticello, called Religious Beliefs, One's Foundation. In response to letter writer Eric Vimmer's thoughts about religion, May 7th, for those who are serious about their religion, it is not one aspect of their lives. It is a central aspect of their lives. Every other aspect, activity, and opinion is influenced by that religion. If one removes a spoke from the axle on the bicycle, the entire wheel is weakened. Same with removing an aspect of life from one's religion. And that again was written by Ted Gill of Monticello. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, May 12, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.